He tells stories so grand of this vast, timeless land, and they call it Sunday with Mac.
This comes from Edna Taylor. She said, and this is a while ago, this is 30 years ago. I'm homesick, Ian, as I listen to your broadcast from Melbourne, as Victoria was my birthplace, Wonthaggi. Now I live on the Gold Coast. Why? I don't know. I miss the rain and the summer blooms, the autumn leaves and old friends and family. Ian, I went to Yallourn in the 20s. This is the 1920s. Open-cut mining. The plant there supplied all of Victoria with electricity. It was not called Yallourn then, as far as I know. We lived in camps. One was called the Western Camp, and we lived in shacks. Anything you could scrounge. Bark, caro tins flattened out, packing cases, dirt floors. As long as the roof didn't leak, we were happy. I saw the first house built in the township and the last one destroyed as coal was under the town and it was needed. As it was being destroyed, my sister Jean and I drove around for 3 days packing up our childhood. Isn't that amazing? Packing up our childhood, our tender years and the married ones. Tears never far from our eyes. We stroked and touched buildings. It was a beautiful town, Ian. The first satellite outside of Canberra. I still get a lump in my throat and a tight feeling in my gut when I think of the Holocaust of Yallourn. Most of my family and many, many of my friends are in the Yallourn Cemetery on top of the haunted hills, said Edna Taylor back in 1989.
If you're rich or you ain't got a cracker, they tell stories so grand of this vast, timeless land, and they call it Sunday with Macca. They all call it Sunday with Macca. Yeah, they all call it Sunday with Macca.
Some of them do. Others do. Don't talk about that.
Get on with it, Macca.
I will. Good morning and welcome. That was, I replayed that, was Edna. She had written to me 30 years ago, and I came across it because you come across, I go through my back pages now and again, as we all do in one way or another. And when she wrote, it was a written letter, and she said, and we went around the town packing up our childhood. And I thought that was just such a lovely thing to say. Something that older people would say, but we wouldn't say anymore because those sort of things just don't, yeah. It's a different world now, different language, and everyone's on their phones. But she said, we packed up our childhood as we went around the town and we stroked and touched buildings because they knocked the joint down because there was coal underneath. And like a lot, it was one of the first satellite towns, I think, after Canberra. Our number is 1300 700 222. In a moment, I'll talk to our medical correspondent, Dr. Ross Wilson, and there's a bloke with him from London. We'll talk to him too. His name's Angus. And we'll talk to you. Big weekend in Melbourne. Of course, the F1. A lot of people are... I just spoke to Bill a little while ago from New Zealand, and he's over for the Formula One. $350 he paid for 4 days. That's not bad. As I said, it's not as much as... Well, maybe it's... I don't know. I suppose you can pay $500 for Taylor Swift, can you? I'm not sure. Or Pink. But, yeah, it's 4 days for $350 seems like a reasonably good... good thing. Look, quickly, this is from Ruth. She says, you know, I thought I'd share with you, and pictures too, I thought I'd share this adventure with you. While sheep minding at Moola in Quinlow, near Quinlow, I noticed the prickly pears were loaded with fruit. And it got me thinking about how our early pioneers made jam out of them. I started Googling how to do it, plus talking to some of the country ladies. I'm now at Kingthorpe till April. My cousin Judy, who lives in Toowoomba, always catches up while I'm here, so, and we live far apart, and we're always looking for some adventure. I put the prickly pear project to her, and she was keen to do it. Well, off we went. So, rugging up in jeans, long sleeve shirts, gloves, gum boots, and armed with tongs, we set off. Challenging, we didn't get too many prickles. Ended up with 2 bucketfuls. On our return to Kingthorpe, we stopped at the village cow cafe Gumbunji for a well-earned coffee. I think that's a plug. It's an amazing place full of antique furniture. Anyway, on with the jam picking. Now to prepare the fruit. Next step, remove the prickles from the fruit. You've seen the prickle, but if you go out Queensland way around Roma, they're everywhere, you know. And it used to be that old drovers and stuff would have to stand on the top of their horse because prickly pear just went on forever and ever and ever. It was just, you couldn't see. It just took over. And then they brought the cactoblastis, the little bug, in, and it made inroads, but they're still around. Anyway, to get the prickles off, I chose to burn them off. So using a drum made a fire for this, using skewers, I rotated the prickly fruit over the flames. Painfully slow process. This done, the next step to slice the fruit and peel the skin, scoop the pulp. We decide to sieve it and use the juice to make jelly instead of the jam. End product is beautiful, but so much work. I take my hat off to those pioneer women, says Ruth Eisen. That's what I think about cooking and your mother or whoever, and they go to so much trouble and then people hook into it and it's gone in 5 minutes. All hours and hours and hours of work or days of work and it's all gone. I think, no, there must be an easier way, but here's to the people who cook. 1300 700 222 quickly. G'day, this is Macca. Hello.
This is Tony Turner and the fellows from all that stomping paddling down the river in support of veterans. We talked to you in early February when we were just about to start. We're currently in Mildura and it's a chilly 14 degrees outside and the boys are just about to get into the water. This is Ian and Ross here as well.
And you've been...
Good morning, Ian.
Good morning. You've been paddling down since February. How far have you gone so far? How far is that?
About 1,400 kilometres. We've got about 880 to go.
And, well, give us a... What's it been like? Okay.
Well, it's Ross here from Old Vet Stomping. Look, it's been absolutely fabulous, Ian. We've met some wonderful people on the river as we've travelled down. And we've experienced some of the great Australian outback. We've seen lots of domestic farm animals, but also lots and lots of wildlife, kangaroos, wallabies, massive amounts of bird life, and even the odd wriggly stick, the odd snake swimming across the river as well. But it's been an absolute wonderful adventure, and we've had heaps of support from everyone we've met on the way down the river.
Well, there you go. So you got 800 k's to go, and have there been any problems with the river or anything? The Murray's got a fair bit of water in it?
On the first week down, we were leaving from Bringinbrong Bridge, which is near Corryong, and there were huge amounts of water being released from the Snowy Mountains scheme, which did make for some adventure on the first week because the current was running at about 10 knots. So, yeah, lots of fun trying to avoid obstacles, stumps in the river and other things. I think both of us went over at least a couple of times, and I've got a decent-sized ding in the side of my kayak. So, yeah, a bit exciting in the first week, but since then it has settled down. The current is a lot less. In fact, we're craving a bit more support from the flow of the river, but it's widened out and much easier now.
Now, you're not young blokes, so, I mean, how many Ks a day do you do?
Well, we started with about 40 kilometres a day, but we've upped it now to 50 kilometres a day. Mm. And, yes, you're right, we're not young blokes. We've got a combined age of 209 years.
Well, I didn't want to know the details. I was just a general, it was just a general comment. Okay. So you've had a good time. You're doing it to raise awareness for veteran... mental health and things?
Yes, we are. I'll let Ian do a little bit of talking, my partner in crime.
Yeah. Hello, Macca. It's Ian.
G'day, Ian.
The offer still is open for you to come and join us, mate. We've got the boat. And we, thanks to you and the last time we spoke, we picked up a couple of extra followers on our Facebook posts. So that was really nice to pick up some of your listeners, and they've been very supportive. And we've even caught up with a few of them along the way who've been waiting for us to pull into their town. So very much appreciated.
That's all right. So what is your Facebook in case people want to get in touch with you, Ian and Tony?
Yeah, it's called Old Vets Stomping.
Old Vets Stomping. Okay. All right. Well,
Normally we walk, but we decided to paddle this time.
Ross's fault.
And it is in support of, veterans generally, but there's a couple of charities and not-for-profits that we're supporting, hoping to raise a few dollars for them, but also to raise awareness. And we've met a number of people who've had a personal experience or know somebody who's had a personal experience with, well, difficulties after their service in the Defence Forces. And even though a lot of those conflicts are over for these people, you know, the war goes on, and that's who we're really trying to support here.
And if I could add, Macca, or if I could give a plug to a couple of the charities we're supporting, Gurrumbut Veterans Retreat in Victoria and Mates Hero Help up in Brisbane. They do some great work for veterans.
And we're going to donate.
And right. We'll donate the boats at the end and any proceeds to those charities and also to Soldier On.
All right. Good on you. Good luck, boys. And keep in touch, okay? Bye.
Good right. on you.
Thank
Thanks,
you.
Ian.
Thanks, Ian.
See you. Bye. Big weekend next weekend in well, all over Australia, really, but certainly in Stawell. Good morning and welcome. Our number's 1300 700 222. I was at the Royal Easter Show the other day. I didn't get a chance to see my next guest, Dr. Ross Wilson, but better still, he's here this morning in the studio. Good morning, Dr. Ross. How are you?
Morning, Macca. I am well.
Good. And with him is Angus Wilson. That's your son.
Correct.
How are you, Angus?
Yeah, good. Thanks, Macca.
You live in England.
I do. I live in the UK.
How long for? Have you been?
I've been there for 7 months working. So yeah,
and
to see Dad and the family.
Is that good? And you came back for the Royal Easter Show, I suppose.
Yeah, no, Dad was quite excited about the Royal Easter Show, so I thought I should come back and see how the excitement played forward. It's been good. It's great to be back.
Yeah,
yeah.
I bet it is, Dr. Ross. You come down to the show every year, or you go to lots of shows, don't you? Because you breed sheep. Sheep's a bit of a wide description. Yeah. Tell us what sort of sheep you breed.
I breed Suffolks and South Downs and a different breed called Aussie Downs.
Aussie Downs, there yep. you go. And how'd you go?
Well, I didn't have Suffolks this year. My grandson brought his Suffolks down, so I don't compete against family.
No, exactly.
South Downs, we took everything, champion ram, champion ewe, etc. And in the Aussie Downs, which compete in a category called any other breed, and it includes a real polyglot of different breeds. We had baby dolls, we had black nose valet, and we had Lincolns against us this year. We got reserve champion ram and champion ewe, and we won a very prestigious group called the Peter Taylor Group, is in memory of a competitor who died driving back from the show many, many years ago. And Peter Taylor is regarded as one of the sort of gurus of sheep competing breeding. And as a memorial to him, each year all the different breeds have a Peter Taylor group who compete against each other in what's called the interbreed. And to win the Peter Taylor group in the interbreed is, I think, the supreme moment of the show.
There you go. So you must be very pleased, mate.
Very, very pleased.
Speaking of... Not any in particular. I was up at Alstonville the other day in northern New South Wales. I think it was there, and a bloke came up to me and said, I'm a good mate of Dr. Ross. Now, don't ask me who he was because I don't know who he was. But he said something about rugby union and they were going on a tour and they want you to go.
It's funny.
Going to England or something? Or?
No, there's a tour planned for the Australian Indigenous team.
Yeah.
To Japan next year.
Well, that's right, yeah.
And they've just asked me to go as the team doctor again. I did one to America a couple of years ago, and this group of young Indigenous players toured America, which is an experience for them, but I think it was an experience for America as well. They're a great bunch of guys, and we played some really good rugby.
Yeah.
I'm fortunate enough to be a life member of Central West Rugby because I've been attached to the Central West team for longer than Moses was on the planet. And, I enjoy my rugby and I look forward to taking the boys to Japan as the doctor next year.
Yeah, I didn't get the details because there was a whole lot of people and I was talking and he came, yep. Oh, look, I'm a mate of Dr. Ross's. And he told me about that. Yeah, you're right, Japan is the... But I think they were very keen on you going and... And I said, well, I don't think you'll have to twist his arm. I think
No. And I think I can remember who the gentleman may be. His nickname's Nugget, and Nugget is heavily involved in trotting.
All right.
He's on the board of the New South Wales trotting.
And you come from Bathurst, and there's a big week. Is it next week or the week after?
Yeah, well, it started this weekend and culminates next weekend in the final of the
Bathurst Gold Crown. Yeah, a lot of money involved in all those, yeah.
Yeah.
And there was something else I was going to tell, but it doesn't matter. Angus, you've been living in England for 7 months.
Yeah.
What do you do over there?
I have a career working in finance in central London, which is a bit different to Dad, but yes, equally enriching in certain ways.
Yeah, I'll bet. Well, London's almost the sort of the centre, isn't it, for finance in Europe?
Yeah, and for what I do, Ian, it's a big part of the world as it enters into Europe. And so for someone who does what I do, it's probably the place to sit if you want to do what I do.
And why did you go there? You were asked to go there, or you thought, I've got to go there? Or
No. I'm very happy working here in Australia for many years as a partner of one of the large accounting firms, and then had a job opportunity, which, you know, at this stage of my life, I'm not too old but not too young, is the right place to be for the next little while. So took that opportunity and I'm enjoying it. I will say I'm up and back between Australia and the UK quite a lot, which is good too, because I get to come back and see Dad and family. Mm. And I don't necessarily get the best of both worlds, but certainly at the moment I'm having a good time.
Do you have an agricultural bent like your dad? Or
I'm nowhere near as proficient as Dad. I did get dragged around to sheep shows and the like as a young man. So
that's unusual.
Yeah,
I can't imagine that.
Have an appreciation.
How would that happen?
Yeah. And unlike Dad, though, I'm more enamoured with cattle. So as a young man.
Tell me about living, because I've never been overseas really very much at all. What's it like living in London? And has it been cold and the weather and all that sort of stuff? And
yeah, no. So living overseas for me is really interesting because London particularly is a real melting pot of many different cultures and backgrounds. And where I live in central London, I guess you only need to walk a block and the demographics change. So I find that really interesting. So for me, that's great. In regards to the weather, we've had a really mild winter in the UK and Europe. And as a result, we've had a lot of rain. So I can appreciate at times why the English might get accused of whinging, because it isn't necessarily as fun living in that climate as it is being back here and having the sun shining. But I weigh that against the opportunity to, for example, I know I often jump onto the continent to work for a couple of days. So I'm lucky.
Mm. And Kate Middleton's all the news lately. I mean, I felt really sorry for her. They won't let up until they get the... And I think it's just really the newspapers, they want the story because they know people are interested. So, I mean, I look at the morning papers now and it's full of Kate Middleton, and no wonder they just pester till the poor girl has to come out and say, well, look, this is what's happening.
It's
remarkable. And I suppose it's remarkable here, and I suppose in London it's even more madcap, if you like.
And depending on which part of the media you read in the UK and even, I guess, here in Australia, it's a kind of choose your own adventure until people come out and tell you what's actually going on.
Speaking of rugby union, I was talking to, because I mentioned I had a neck problem, I went to see a physio and he has something to do with rugby, and we were talking about rugby, and I said, and he said, oh, rugby's in a poor place, you know, and we were talking about rugby's always been strong in the bush, hasn't it? Always been strong in the bush, and probably still is. And even the Shoot Shield, which is the domestic, that's really strong. And yet, at the top level, it seems like it's a big mishmash, isn't it?
It is, but I think at grassroots, the enjoyment that players get is the important part of the game.
Mm.
And I enjoy nothing more than going down watching one of the local matches, and particularly matches between Bathurst and Orange, because of this incredible rivalry between the two towns. And at the end of the match, they all walk off, go to the bar at the Bulldogs Club and sink a few beers, and it's all forgotten, and it's a really great atmosphere. It's a genuine warmth between the players. And I don't see that happening with our local rugby league.
Mm.
Even the cross-town rivalry between the Bathurst Panthers and Bathurst St Pats doesn't produce an end-of-match camaraderie that's enjoyed
by
rugby.
And that's what sports should be about, really.
Oh,
well, to me, anyway.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally.
But you don't, yeah. And that's a good thing. So, I mean, I think this, while that still exists at a local level, I think there's always hope for the future.
Mm.
Tell me about the medical, what's happening in hospitals and the medical and the whole thing. Immigration's going wild and people saying, look, we can't get into a hospital, we can't see a doctor, doctors are resigning, teachers are resigning. What's happening from your perspective in the health industry?
I think we're running out of money in health, and that's because there are a lot of competing aspects to community at present. And health is being more and more expensive because all the costs of the consumables and so on like this is increasing. People are wanting more out of health and not prepared to invest in their own health. So they're expecting the medical system to do it for them. And rather than taking a responsibility and saying, I will try and do as I'm told by my doctor or do as I'm asked by my doctor, I'll take my own course and he'll fix it up later. So I think we need a change of attitude.
And we how do you get that? Where does that starts at school, at home and at primary school, doesn't it?
I think it does. But I think also we've got to get the message from our government that this is what's necessary if you're going to sustain a medical system. My constant complaint is we've got a maldistribution of all the health professionals. We've got 30% of the Australian population living rurally, and we've got 20% of the doctors and nurses and allied health practising rurally. So we've got the great bulk of medical practitioners still on the, within 50k of the coastline. We need them inland if we're going to redistribute the health care of the country as a whole.
I don't know how you change that. I mean, there was... wasn't it Newcastle University were training doctors, kids from rural areas to become doctors, but what do? They squib it and go back to the city or something?
Yeah, and we've unfortunately got a lot of young doctors sitting in hospital positions hoping to get onto specialist training programs. There's some, it's quoted 6,000 sitting in hospitals sort of marking time till they get into specialist training. Come on, be a GP for a few years, then think about your specialist career.
It should be, you know, I don't know anything about it, but it seems to me it should be de rigueur. You should have to do that. It's like like learning the, learning what this business does from the ground up. So you start in the mail room, like our boss here at the ABC started in the mail room and ends up as the boss, and that's the way you learn the whole business, you know. And you go through marketing and whatever, and so that seems like a very good thing. The other thing, when I was in hospital a couple of years ago, it was in the middle of COVID for a start, but it seemed chaotic, and that was a different time, I suppose. But because I was on a stretcher going down to have an ultrasound, I think, and there was a great contretemps in the because I was being wheeled along, and the two of the people didn't have masks on, so this doctor came up, and there was a great yelling match in the middle of the thing, and I thought, this is not a good... I didn't mind, but it's not a good look. And that was in the middle of COVID, I suppose. But hospitals, for that reason, and a bit like teaching, it seems that teachers don't want to be teachers anymore or because it's too hard. All those things are too hard. I don't know if it's the fact that we don't want to work hard anymore because, you know, you look at your grandfather and they went through great trials and tribulations to do whatever they did, and they worked hard and they did incredible hours, or we've just lost that, or is it really too hard for people to, you know, you're in a hospital all the time? And
I think it's work-life balance is the key phrase for most of the young people in medicine, but it's also the same on the land. We're hearing in the sheep shed where I am constant reckonings of how properties can continue to function because we can't get shearers, we can't get farmhands, etc. like that, because young people don't seem to want to work. They want to balance their life outside work and their work responsibilities. And unfortunately, that doesn't work. It's not a 40-hour week. And sometimes you might need to work 100 hours. Sometimes you might get away with 20. But they can't see it as a balance that can be achieved.
And nothing can work like that. I mean, and as soon as it hits the fan, it's a bit like I always think, and I spoke to my mate Cole Joy about it, and he's a great believer in some sort of national service where everybody has to do, I don't know, 3 months or 6 months, and it's nothing really to do with firing guns, or that can be part of it. When you look around the world, it's a pretty dangerous place. But something where you're just giving back to the community and you're learning a bit about, you're talking about health, well, one good way to do that is to be in some sort of national service where you do some, you know, calisthenics and push-ups and run around and do all that sort of stuff for a general national health. But we don't seem to want to do those sort of things either. But sooner or later, I think it'll hit the fan and then we'll have to do it. And it's always too... It's a bit like COVID came up and kicked us in the bum and we didn't know anything about it. We should have.
I totally agree. I think we've got to do a community rethink about what responsibility to your community really is.
Yeah. Now, tell me, Angus, I'm talking to Dr. Ross Wilson, who's been our medical correspondent and sometimes rugby correspondent and sometimes agricultural correspondent. Angus, you can be a financial correspondent from Europe. How's things going? How are they going? How are the POMs going?
So the economy in the UK, I've got to be honest, the last 12 months is probably was slower than it has been in the last 10 years, definitely. Mm. What I would say, though, is there's definitely been, probably in the first couple of months of this year, a change in temperament in London, and people are more optimistic than they've perhaps been. I think people have got to the point where they understand what the new normal might look like, and people are now getting back to business. So I'm hopeful that that will continue. And I think one of the things I'd say about being back down here, the Australian economy obviously has its own challenges, but I would say to people, it's in a much rosier place than some of the other economies in the Northern Hemisphere.
Look around the world.
Yeah.
This is the All Over News. This is the All Over News, and with long weekend, Easter, just around the corner, don't need to tell you about safety on the roads and also in the water and on our rivers. What better day to talk to a bloke from Marine Rescue? The surf is absolutely pumping, washing machine days.
It's a washing machine day, Macca, and all of our bars on the far north coast are pretty much not recommended for the boaties, so they'll be staying home with a cup of coffee and a good book.
You hope. I'm talking to Jim Roberts. You're the Deputy
Unit Commander at Marine Rescue New South Wales Evans Head Unit.
Days like this, I suppose in some ways it gives you a shiver up your spine because somebody's always silly enough to chance it.
We do get the opportunity every now and then to put our skills to the test and go out and bring somebody who's made a wrong life choice. Fish are not worth it. Marine Rescue works with maritime police, with water police. Maritime or the water police control everything that happens on the ocean in terms of rescues. We're a first responder unit. During the floods, for instance, Marine Rescue Evans Head had a number of people who worked with the SES and the other first responders. We ran rescue boats up and down the Evans and Richmond River, along with other groups as well, but particularly Evans Head. During the fires of the 2019 season, we were the first marine rescue unit to be stood up to work with RFS, with the Rural Fire Service. And as a consequence, we had a number of people working out of RFS headquarters in Casino, assisting with radios, doing general logistic work, running food drops around and so on, doing house door knocking and so on, house calls such as that. So our little unit, yeah, we're getting there, we're getting better. Our aspirational goal is to get back to 7-day, 2 shifts a day radio operation, and we'll get there. But we need to get more members to get there. So, Macca, give us a big plug for new members, my friend.
Okay. The difference between life and death is just, you know, that much.
It can be seconds. Somebody gets caught in a rip, and people who don't and can't read the ocean and read the beach conditions often find themselves in rips, and they don't understand how to get out of them. The other issue that is quite a significant issue up and down our coast is the rock fishermen who go out onto the rocks, and they may have been doing it for years. They think they're bulletproof, and then all of a sudden a big wave comes along, and before they know it, they're in the water and they're gone. And the difference between life and death can be just a few minutes. Bang on the head and they're unconscious and they drown.
When did you get into marine rescue? How did that happen, Jim?
I'm a retired high school principal and got into marine rescue as something to do about seven years ago. I'm a radio operator. Marine Rescue Evans Head is a relatively small unit just south of Ballina. We're desperately looking for new members, and we are getting new members. We're getting people, and younger people, people in the 30s to 40s and mainly 50s to 60s demographic. We're looking for radio operators and crew, and anybody who's listening to this on Sunday and who's close to Evans Head, say within 3/4 of an hour's drive, we'd welcome you with open arms.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because we live in Australia, thousands and thousands of miles of coastline. In fact, one of the few countries which is really surrounded by water. I mean, a lot of European countries don't know anything about it, but we've got thousands and thousands of miles of coastline.
And we have world-class resources. Marine Rescue New South Wales and most of the other rescue organisations, the training is world class. Our radio operators could operate anywhere in the world, and our crew and skippers could operate anywhere in the world. So the quality of the training that new members get is outstanding.
So you were always a little boatie when you were a kid? Or?
I loved the water. I loved being on a boat. Quite often it was a boat that took four people to carry, a little rowing boat that my dad built, as heavy as. We just played around in the water, and yeah, there were times I think when we didn't use a lot of common sense either, but we managed to survive.
Tell me about being a principal of a high school.
Being a principal of a high school is challenging. I loved it. I loved the school. I was deputy at Ballina for many years, science head teacher, deputy and acting principal at Orsonville High for many years, and then finished up 4.5 years as principal at Glen Innes. So I loved the challenges. I loved working with the kids. I probably missed the camaraderie more than anything else. I think we probably had the better years.
Everybody goes to the boss, don't they, when there's a problem?
Everybody goes to the boss, and the boss is supposed to have all the magic answers and the magic bullets. Doesn't always happen.
And you're a science teacher, and science seems to be, you know, everyone's talking about STEM now, but many kids don't have to do it or don't want to do it.
Mac, I fully believe that our system needs to get back to basics. We need to get back to the sorts of things we were teaching kids 15, 20 years ago, 30 years ago. I think we're losing our way a little bit in that direction. We also need to invest more in the authority of the principals. Principals know their schools and run their schools well generally, and they need to be able to exercise the authority that goes with that. Unfortunately, we've got powers that be and still have powers that be that think they know better.
Jim Roberts, nice to talk to you. It's a wonder the Education Department hasn't called you back. Apparently we're very short of teachers still, so maybe there's some years left in you, mate. Back to school, mate.
I think I'm well and truly... That's a part of my life that's it's come and gone. I don't think I've got the temperament or the nerves.
Good on you, Jim. Yeah, it's a pleasure. Next weekend's a big weekend for everybody around Australia. I wish I was in Stawell, actually, next weekend, Easter weekend, for the Stawell gift. It's a great meeting and people come from everywhere. Runners and non-runners and gamblers. Great weekend in store. But there's things on all over Australia. My next guest, Lorraine Purcell. Good morning, Lorraine.
Good morning, Ian.
You've got something on next week. And where will you be next weekend?
I'll be in Hill End in New South Wales.
The gold in gold country.
That's right.
Do they still find gold there?
Yes, they do. Mm-hmm. Yes, the mining company's working on Hawkins Hill at the moment. Fossickers are still getting little nuggets around the area as well.
And you'll be in Hill End because there's a book here you've got on your table, St Paul's Presbyterian Church, Hill End. Tell me the story. It's a lovely building. 150 years old, isn't it?
It is, yes. It was built in the heyday of Hill End, 1872. They'd been mining on Hawkins Hill for a few years, and that was the year that the big Holterman nugget was uncovered and brought to the surface.
Who was Mr. Holterman?
Mr. Holterman was one of the major miners on Hill End, mine owner. He and Louis Byers had one of the leases among many. They had been working for many years, but on the 19th of October, 1872, the night shift revealed that there was a huge mass of gold, and it was the Holterman nugget, which stood 4'6" high, 4 inches thick. And
you're kidding.
No, really? I'm not. It was actually not a nugget. It was a specimen, but it got the name of the Holterman nugget. It took 12 men to bring it to the surface.
It had little seams of gold through it, did it?
Yes, was a mixture of quartz, gold and shale. Came to the surface. It only actually saw the light of day for about a week because although Mr. Holterman wanted to keep it and buy it from the shareholders, they wanted the money. They had time booked at the local battery. It came to light on Saturday morning. It was on display at Hodgson's store for a week where people could come and look at it for a cost of a shilling donation, which went towards the building of the local hospital up there. And on the Friday, it was crushed up with a whole lot of other ore from the mine. That was the end of the Holterman specimen.
Now, next weekend, as I said, people are doing everything everywhere. Hill End, you've got a get-together for the Presbyterian Church.
Yeah.
I think I was a Presbyterian at one stage, but They're not very common now, are they, Presbyterians?
No, they're a very small breed. There's only four left in the congregation in Hillend. There is moves afoot to actually decommission the church. We're not really sure what's going to happen to the church, unfortunately.
It looks a lovely building.
It is an absolutely beautiful building. All the furnishings are made of cedar. It stands the same as what it was 152 years ago. There's no power there. So when they have evening services, they've actually got lanterns that have to be used. All the old kerosene lanterns filled up with the kero, the chimneys on them cleaned and hauled back up to the inside of the church.
So next weekend in Hillend, there's a gathering, launching of this book, St Paul's yes. Presbyterian Church Hillend, 150 years, and a good time will be had by all.
It will, we hope.
Australia's okay. Buzzing, Hillend's buzzing on the Easter weekend. Lorraine, great to talk to you. Good on you.
Thanks very much, Ian.
I'm at the Sydney Royal talking to
Hugh Mitchell,
George Kidd,
and Tom Kieran.
What's the story, Hugh?
I'm here to show cattle for the school.
For yeah. the school? What's the school?
Macquarie Anglican in Dubbo.
And what year are you boys in?
Year 11.
That's one of your subjects, is it? Sort of agriculture? What's it called, the subject you do?
Oh, sort of cattle club, I guess.
Yeah,
sort of called.
Yeah. Team. We just do that as an co-curricular event. Yeah.
So you still have to do maths and stuff?
Yeah. Unfortunately, they're making us study here.
No, maths is good. Maths is good. I reckon even if you got to struggle to do maths, I reckon life's all about struggle. So you've got to set you up for life if you can do it. George, you get down to the big smoke much?
Oh, no, I usually stay around Dubbo, stay in the small towns, you know. A bit hectic around here.
What do you like about the show? Do you enjoy coming down here?
Oh, yeah, it's great. You see, like, all the different agriculture things, goats, pigs, sheep.
And kids from other schools, I suppose, too?
Yeah, there's plenty of schools come down from all across New South Wales, so great to see other people that you don't see very often.
You're Hugh. Are you from the land?
No, I'm not, no.
So how come you picked cattle? I mean, didn't you know much about them before you started school?
I've done a bit of work with them, but just interested in it, and it allows pathways for kids like me who aren't on the land to get into the industry, so yeah.
Yeah, well, I always think that agriculture is the growing thing. Everyone around the world's got to be fed. Tommy, what do you do? What's your background?
Yeah, I live on a farm just about 70k south of Dubbo, in a town, small town called Yeovil. Yeah, we run cattle and sheep and a bit of cropping as well.
So you inform the boys who haven't got any background with cattle about what goes on, have you? What side's up and stuff?
Yeah, I'd like to, but you know, they know a fair bit as well.
So how's Dubbo going? All right?
Yeah, good. It's a bit dry out there. We need some more rain, but yeah, it's going well.
Good on you. Hugh, George and Tommy. Good on you. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet
boys.
You.
Boys.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Lindy's in Perth. Morning, Lindy.
Good morning, Mac. So good to chat with you. This is my first time calling in.
Wow. Yeah, good.
Yeah, Mac, I just wanted to see if people's interest would be stirred in knowing that Donald Campbell's Bluebird K7 has returned to Coniston Water in England.
I think they would be. I would be. Is that what it was called? Bluebird was called K7, was it?
Yeah, it was the hydroplane that he broke the world water speed record in 1964. I was fascinated the other day. I was on a site on Facebook that I belong to called Welcome to Cumbria and the Lake District. And on there was a video of Bluebird being in a lovely procession down the streets into Coniston, where it has returned to Coniston Water. And it's going to be at the Ruskin, or it is now standing in the Ruskin Museum there.
Uh-huh.
But I was fascinated because I have been there. I've been to Coniston on several occasions. I love the Lake District, but now living in Australia since coming from South Africa, I have been out to Dumbleyung as well, where that record was broken.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, and it's just amazing. And you know that his legacy lives on in Dumbleyung because there's a replica of Bluebird in Dumbleyung. And they unveiled it, I think it was in 2017, if I stand corrected there. It was the 50th anniversary of him breaking that record on Dumbleyung, Lake Dumbleyung. And his daughter came out for the unveiling of this replica there. And apparently she was only 17 at the time of her father's death, and she was absolutely amazed at what has gone on in Dumbleyung to remember her dad there. And yeah, it was just a lovely celebration apparently in 2017. Now I've actually seen that there too, because I did a funeral and a burial in Dumbleyung a few years ago, and the cemetery overlooks Lake Dumbleyung, and it was just an amazing thing to stand there and look out over that lake and remember him, and also remember the time that I'd been at Coniston Water and to have known that he was there. So just a lovely thing to see.
Well, since you mentioned Donald Campbell, it makes me think of Lake Eyre and Lake Dumbleyung and the world land speed record and water speed record go on, sorry.
Apparently, he remains the only person to set the land and water speed record in the same year. I think that's quite an achievement.
You've been very warm in Perth, haven't you? And I think you've got another warm week. I was looking, and you're in the 30s. You've had a stinker.
Absolute stinker. Yeah. We certainly have. Although I must admit, I mean, the days are hot now, but not as hot as they have been with the 40-degree ones.
No.
But the evenings are much cooler. The nights are getting a bit chilly. So, yeah.
Mm. Well, that's nice. Good on you, Lindy. Thanks for reminding us about Donald Campbell and Lake Dumbleyung and Coniston and K7. Good on you.
Yeah, lovely. Thank you, Macca. Thanks so much for taking my call.
Pleasure. You still may not know who my guest is, but I first heard about him when my sister came home from Melbourne. She said, "Oh, I've just been to Melbourne with Chrissy." She went to school with Chris, her friend Chris. And she said, "Oh, we saw the Twilights and we met David Mackay." And she did all these mighty things. And my guest, ladies and gentlemen, is a bloke called David Mackay. And it's a great pleasure to welcome him here. He's not famous like Johnny Farnham, but he's he's had his fingers all over lots and lots of music. Good morning, David.
It's lovely to meet you, Ian. Fantastic.
it's great to have you. I was about, I don't know, 17 or 18 or something.
A kid.
Yeah, just a kid. And she went to Melbourne and she saw the Twilight. And, oh, why didn't I go? They wouldn't take me because I was only a whippersnapper. But, David, you've done lots and lots of things, and you've met everybody. The other day you had lunch with Col Joy.
I did indeed. In fact, I'm hoping to see him again tomorrow before we head back to England.
Yeah.
Because my career started off when I was 14. I made my first record here at Festival Records, and Col and the Joy Boys were the backing group.
Wow.
Yeah, so that was my start, and he's been a friend ever since I was 14.
And when I heard the start of, when I played the start there of Sadie, which had the uke on, David said, "You should have got Colin to play."
Yes.
He's a great, lovely ukulele player.
He is an amazing player.
Yeah.
In fact, we made a record about 4 or 5 years ago, a remake of, I can't think what the song was now, but it started off with he was just playing the ukulele in Clayton's studio in London.
Mm.
And I said, "That's great. We should make a record of that." So put it down with his ukulele, and then I put all the other musicians on it.
Mm.
And it's great. I don't think he's ever released it. He's probably scared.
Yeah. Tell me about the David Mackay story. As I said, I've learned about you. I mean, I didn't know who you were, but when my sister came back from, and she said, "Oh, we saw the Twilights and all this sort of stuff," and that was formative years, I suppose, for many of us, baby boomers or post-war baby boomers, and rock and roll, and that's when you grew up, and I suppose I grew up, and it was, when you look back on it now, it's still an amazing time, and those songs resonate with people all around the place.
Yeah, it was the day when songs were the king, really, and it was all about songs. Today production has gone to lengths that people could just hit a button and have a drum loop and things like that. In these days, you had to get the musicians, the singers together. You worked it all up in the studio. You changed things around. Today, of course, it's nothing like that, which is to me is a pity. But the fun's gone out of it.
Yeah, I saw a clip of you, a black and white clip of you back in the '60s with your
hair down his shoulder.
Sorry about that.
And it's just interesting, isn't it? Because I've never seen you before, and here you are in the studio. You look completely different.
Thanks a lot. Old, no, you mean?
Look, no. You just look it's like a bloke said to me. He said, we were doing an outside broadcast in Melbourne. He came along and he said, Macca, he said, my son's down in Anglesey. He said, he wants to know what you look like. Pause, and everybody laughed. And he said, what'll I tell him? And then they all collapsed. And anyway, it's just by the by. Tell me about music. When did you get the bug? Were you always going to be involved in music? Or
yes, it was from the old days of Brian Henderson's Bandstand. Mm-hmm. And wanting to perform on... I saw a group called the Tunettes with three girls, and they were very pretty, and they sang. And I went to school on the Monday, said to Ross Linton, a pal of mine, did you see those girls on Bandstand? They're really lovely looking girls. He said, yeah. I said, but they just sing in unison. So we could do that. So we got another pal of mine, Graham McGann, and we formed a group called the Toppers. And we auditioned for Bandstand, and we got on. And the following week, when we did our first Bandstand, there were the Tunettes. And I went up to them and said, would you like us to teach you to sing in harmony? And they said, yeah, that'd be great. So we all started at the age of 14 with Col. Wow. And the Joy Boys. And we toured with them in the school holidays. And that was the beginning of it. And I was studying at the conservatorium at the same time. And that was basically the beginning of the love of music.
And ladies and gentlemen, I'm talking to David Mackay. He's an arranger and a producer and a musician and all sorts of things. And it's taken you around the world and you've met everybody, as you just heard there, Cliffy Richards. And living and working in London, that must be great. Abbey Road, and it's, well, really was the home of, I mean, the British invasion, really music was centred in London, really, wasn't it?
It was. The Abbey Road experience was really good. I still think the formative years for me were the Australian years, which were mostly down at Bill Armstrong Studios in Melbourne, with Roger Savage and Bill Armstrong and all of that crowd. They really created something special down there. And when I went to Abbey Road, I mean, it's a wonderful studio, but the heart of it to me was still back in Melbourne. Mm. The fun of it was Melbourne.
Well, I've always thought, and I live in Sydney, but I've always thought that Melbourne was the joint, you know, was the place for music, for lots of things. But certainly music seemed to emanate from Melbourne, and the things that really mattered in music mostly happened in Melbourne.
Totally. And so many acts from South Australia. I mean, you think of the Vibrants and all these guys, the Twilights, all started off in Adelaide.
And they came across to Melbourne.
Record, yeah. It was great.
Yeah. So what's been the highlight, do you reckon, of your... Because you've done television stuff as well. I played a little grab there of... If We Design Pet, Breaking Away. That's a great song too, isn't it?
Yes, it was. The actual song that we used on the end titles, That's Living All Right, became the big hit in England. But I wrote that for the opening titles, and the producer said, no, we don't fancy that. We want something else. So I wrote Breaking Away. And at the end of it, they said, oh, well, now Breaking Away is great, so they're happy with that. So I said, do you reckon we could use That's Living All Right on the end titles? And they said, well, yeah, no one watches the end titles. They go and make their tea and coffee. And the second week the show was on air in England, That's Living All Right became the second biggest selling record of the year in the UK.
And so when you look back on your career, what do you think? What do you think? All the success, or I wish I'd have done this, or I could have. You have all those sort of things in life, don't you, the further you go?
Yeah. To me, there are two kinds of producers. There's the guys who get the lucky break and just have those one or two hits, or those who make a career out of it, who have the music background and the production background that really want to make a living out of it. Mm. And that's really the way I approached it. Mm. I mean, I keep out of the public eye, because to me, the public just want to think, well, Cliff Richard made that record. They don't want to know who Dave Mackay is. They just want to think of Cliff. And that's really what we try to sell, is the artists. You know, you try and create these new artists, and they're the ones who you want the public to love.
They're like a little pop. They're like a little ad, aren't they? Songs. Yeah. I was, and especially in the early days, in the rock and roll days, they were about a minute 58 or a minute 56 or something for a record, and that was all. And if it was over 2 minutes, you wouldn't get played.
That was so fun. I mean, Elvis Presley was the master of that, wasn't he? I mean, these tiny little records.
What do you think of that's an interesting thing to talk about. The survival of Elvis. I mean, it just keeps going on and on. You've probably heard it. You come back to Australia and you live in England, but you come back to Australia. But Parkes, they have this Elvis was amazing.
I know.
And all around the world. And Elvis, you know, where people, I was in the Gold Coast and a bloke came up. I was signing some books and he came up and I said, oh, g'day, Frank, what do you do? He says, oh, I'm an Elvis impersonator. I said, all right, and that was fun, you know, because we all love Elvis. And he said, when I first came here 20 years ago, there was only 3 Elvis impersonators on the Gold Coast. Now there's 47. <Or
something. laughs> It's not fair.
It's tough being an Elvis impersonator. But you imagine how many there are around the world. But it's great for music, and I don't know, it's more about the jumpsuits and everything, really, than anything else.
And they all look the same.
Get on with it, Macca.
I will. Good morning and welcome. I'm in the studio this morning talking to a bloke called David Mackay, who we both knocked around Oatley, a suburb of Sydney, when we were little kids, younger kids. With him is a fellow called Peter Roach. Good morning, Peter. Do you want to say hello?
Good morning.
Yep. Peter doesn't want to talk, but he said good morning, so we might get more out of him in a little minute. That was Digger singing our theme, and I have a thing here from a bloke called Les Arnold, and he says, today we were very fortunate to go to the good old days of rock and roll at Taree Entertainment Centre. Keeping us bopping were Jade Hurley, Little Paddy, Dinah Lee, Lucky Star and Digger of L, and great backing musos, including Woody from the Deltones. Among the great songs from that era, your old mate Digger sang Somewhere Over the Rainbow, which I've got here, I should play it. Absolutely fabulous, says Les and Penny from Tuncurry. Their names to conjure with David Mackay. Good morning again.
They are indeed. I did work with a few of those.
I bet you did.
Little Patty, for sure, and Jade.
Yeah, Jade. Yeah.
Digger, I recorded Digger when I was an engineer, when I was around about 16, at AWA Studios.
That's in Sydney somewhere.
Yeah, it's the AWA building with the tower in York Street. Mm, yeah. I had a little studio there, and that's where I first engineered. And Digger was one of the first acts that I actually engineered.
Yeah, he sings well, Dig. He's still singing well. We've done some tours with Digger and around the place. But it's interesting, isn't it? We were talking about music and the music of that era. And these good old, I suppose they happen all around the world, these good old days of rock and roll.
Oh, yeah.
But they're very, very popular, aren't they? Ricky Nelson did his garden party thing. And he said, no, they all wanted me to sing, you know,
the
Hello
old songs.
Mary Lou.
Yeah, exactly.
Sort of stuff.
Yeah.
But they priceless. Music just lives on in your memory. It's just it's wonderful, isn't it? Reminds you of girls and boys and, you know, all sorts of things, doesn't it? Times and, yeah, where you were.
And those songs will last forever. That's the great thing.
Yeah, I'll say. So David Mackay is an arranger, a producer, and he knows just about everybody who's been in the music business in Australia, certainly, and around the world. That's a mighty thing. I suppose you can ring up anyone, can you? And almost.
Borrow money.
Yeah. No. And you've worked with lots of people, not only just musicians, but arrangers and producers and all sorts of people.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the musicians obviously become your friends, and without them, we've nothing. You know, you're limited by your own imagination, but when you go into a studio and you get a bunch of great musicians, they turn something, you might have a spark of an idea, exactly, and they'll turn it into something really special.
Yes.
And that's the exciting part. Finding a voice like John Farnham was a privilege, you know. I mean, that guy, he could sing the phone book and you'd listen to it.
Yes.
There's one of his songs which I always refer to as a masterclass in singing, which is Burn For You. Mm. For any young singer that wants to hear something really special, that song is just out of this world.
Yes, that's what I think. I heard, who's the arranger in the Little River Band, the singer arranger? I was going to say Garth Porter. But B. Birtles and the other one is, anyway, it doesn't matter. I heard him talking about it the other day. The one
Oh, isn't that stupid?
The other guitar player in the Little Ripper Band.
And the main writer.
Yeah, the main
wonderful writer.
Yeah, and he was talking about that same song, Burnt For You and Farnham.
Yeah, it's just brilliant.
Yeah.
And the version that they did of Help.
Yeah.
But, isn't that terrible? It's driving me mad. What's his name? Graham Gobel.
Graham Gobel.
And his arrangement of Help was just brilliant. And John's vocal on that is stunning.
Mm.
And, of course, since then, Tina Turner's copied that as well.
And Graham Gobel is an arranger in the old school, like the old school. And I think that was a cause of friction in the band because Glenn Shorrock was, easy to go, here we go. And Gobel has arranged everything And that's why their songs are so great.
It was wonderful chemistry, really. Yeah. I mean, although they didn't get on, the writing of those great songs, Glenn still says he's the greatest Australian songwriter ever, which I think is probably true. But what Glenn did to the vocals was stunning. Mm. You know?
And that's what happens in, as you say, you know, you get into a studio and there's somebody like Glenn Campbell in there, and they can add something to the song that just wasn't there before, either with the way they sing it. And I love the way Glenn Campbell has sung those. So he's got a sort of a cry in his voice, not a cry, but a sadness in his voice, a pathos in his voice that some people just don't have. So when he sings Wichita Lineman, there's a lot of pathos in that song and it comes out in his voice.
And it's interesting because Jimmy Webb wrote so many of those songs for him.
Mm.
And I actually, when in 1966, I was sent on a trip by EMI to go to America and sat in at Capitol record studio in Hollywood. And I sat in on a Glenn Campbell session. And that man is one of the greatest guitar players ever.
Mm.
He plays beautiful guitar, great singer. But the chemistry between Jimmy Webb and him is incredible.
Mm.
You know, without Jimmy Webb, Glenn Campbell would never have had all those wonderful records.
Exactly. Great song. I'll take a call. G'day, this is Macca.
G'day, Macca. It's Robbie and Ben.
Robbie and Ben. I better explain to my guest, David McKay, who Robbie and Ben are. We were in Tamworth at the start of the year. And we did our program there because there's always lots of music there and there's lots of people from all over Australia come to look at the music and talk. So we do our little outside broadcast there. And Lee Kelly, my producer, was wondering. I said, you better go around and phone some buskers because the big thing, everybody goes to Tamworth to be discovered. And Lee found Ben and Robbie in the street. So they said, come along, and they came along. And they're marvellous. Robbie's the singer, I think. Robbie and Ben, and they're both on the line this morning. Robbie and Ben, who am I talking to? Robbie, is it?
Yeah, Ben's here too. But yes, so me and Ben are in Orange right now. We met up here yesterday, and we're here for the Legends Race Day, which is a gathering that happens every year to commemorate racing legends of the Greater Orange area, who sadly have passed on.
There you go. Now, Robbie lives in Sydney and Ben lives in Wagga Wagga, so they don't get they don't get together much. So you've been playing there?
Yeah, just a little bit.
And how's it been going, all right?
Yeah, it's been going great so far. It's good to play with him again, so yeah.
It's a beautiful area as well.
Yeah, it is, I'll say. You don't have your instrument. You want to sing us a song over the phone? Is that possible? And play the guitar?
Yeah, we can give you a chorus of a song that we just learnt today for the gig.
Uh-huh. All right. And this is is this your song or?
Oh, this is a fairly popular song called Castle on the Hill, and it's by Ed Sheeran.
All right. Mm. Of course, Ed Sheeran and Tay Tay, the fabulous, the most popular. All right, Robbie and Ben, give us a spasm of Eddie Sheeran.
I'm on my way, driving at night, and the country way, singing to shiny dancers, I miss the way you lay. See, it's really late, but the night is over the castle on the hill.
Well, you'll brain them if you keep doing that. You got a little PA with you and all that sort of thing, Robbie and Ben?
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
So, well, you'll have to keep doing. I've got a record producer and arranger here. He maybe, I think he's reasonably impressed, Robbie and Ben. Maybe, yeah.
So good.
You better keep in touch. So, are you playing anywhere at Easter? I mean, I suppose the thing with you two is you need to get together a bit more often, get a routine and a little show together, take it on the road.
Yeah, we try to get together as much as possible.
Yeah, well, I think that's a good idea. And appeal to young and old, get a couple of old tunes. You should go through your old, talk to some older people and find some old, because there's some great old songs around. I always think, you know, there's been so many songs written and everybody's striving, I'll write another song, and everybody wants to write songs and they're all trying to write songs and, you know, there's two good ones and 53 bad ones or just ordinary ones. But there's been so many lovely songs and I can go through and I think, oh, isn't that a great song? Isn't that a great song? I was listening to Woodstock, the song the other day that Stephen Stills sings, which was written by Joni Mitchell. And apparently Neil Young said, you think that's a great version? You should have heard him sing the demo. He said the demo was even better than the one that ended up on the record. But Robbie and Ben, you keep in touch, and as I said, I was going to get some ideas, but I might go on the road and do a concert or two around there. So you ought to get your act together and come on the road with me, okay?
Yeah, mate, you've got our number.
Okay. Interesting. You've got our number. That'll work. I tell you what, the other thing, I was up in Austinville the other day and I met a bloke who was doing, they were selling some bits and pieces for cystic fibrosis at the Blues Festival, which is on next weekend. And oh, yeah. He said, we've got some guitars for sale. Gibson used to give us guitars, but now we've got these guitars made by George Loudon. And my grandma, grandma was a Loudon, but George Loudon makes the, and he makes them for who?
Ed Sheeran.
Exactly. He's Ed Sheeran's guitar maker because Ed Sheeran was a bit concerned about the sound he was getting in big concerts. So this George Loudon, and I looked them up on the, on the net, and the guitars the bloke's got to are only, you know, entry level guitars, as you know, they're worth about $1,000 or something. But he's making guitars worth $15,000 and $20,000 and $25,000. Yeah. This George Loudon in Ireland. So there you go. Have you got one of those, Benny?
Oh man, I'd love to, but no.
Well, you'll be right. Just stick with what you got for a while, and you'll earn the money later. Robbie and Ben, great to talk to you.
Yeah, good.
Thanks, Mark. Great to talk to you too, mate.
All right, we'll talk to you soon.
All right.
See you. Bye.
Bye. See ya. My guest this morning is David Mackay. They came along to Tamworth and they were just really great. He's got a lovely, clear, beautiful voice. And he's had some lessons from, our...
Not Tommy Emmanuel.
Tommy, yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah,
and they're about 14, 13 or 14
great.
Years old.
That's brilliant.
And they're very good. They're very good.
Fantastic.
So, David, you live in England. Whereabouts do you live?
We live in Surrey.
In Surrey,
William and Surrey, yes. Yeah, nice little village.
Yeah, they've got a nice cricket team, haven't they? and you come back reasonably regularly?
Well, this is our first time in 5 years, sadly. Of course, of COVID, things got pushed back.
Oh, yeah.
But I've got, you know, loads of cousins here, and it was just lovely to get around and see everybody. And
Do you miss us?
Of course I do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you a little Aussie still or?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah. But Europe was the place to be, wasn't it, for music and
It was, yeah. And I mean my thing was I was trying to take Australian records to England to get them released because in those days the record companies in America and England weren't interested in Australian records. And because I had the Twilights and all these various other acts, I was just trying to get them recognised over there. And particularly I wanted them to sign John Farnham, but they didn't want to sign John Farnham because they had Cliff Richard.
Oh, right.
And that was the hard bit. So, but then I came back in 71 and recorded a couple of things, one of them being the Pushbike song. And that was one of the big breaks that we got for an Australian record being released in England, and that became huge in England.
Yeah, I'll say, and that's always been a problem, isn't it? Wasn't for the Easy Beats and everybody, great bands, but they just didn't click, and many have gone over.
It's a shame, and of course The Twilights were one that should have been huge in England, but sadly, you know, until you get the record company interested, you haven't got a chance.
Yeah, and Terry Britton, what's he doing there?
He just made an album of his great songs, himself doing it just for himself, mm-hmm. and it's a wonderful album. But of course, he's still writing songs.
Where's he, here or
no? He's in Richmond in Surrey, just mm-hmm. outside of London. Mm-hmm. He's got a lovely studio, and he just writes great songs still.
You've made me desire to go to. I've never been to London. I've been to Los Angeles once,
really?
and to New York for a couple. Bought a guitar at Sam Asher's, but that's basically all.
What's wrong with you, man?
Yeah, exactly. I'll have to. I can't do this program if I'm overseas, or can I? Maybe I could.
Yeah, you could do it from our house.
Okay, we'll come to Surrey. Listen, you've been a legend in my head. From all those years ago, because I always thought the Twilights were great, and Glenn Shorrock's got a lovely set of pipes,
yep,
hasn't he?
He has indeed.
And great bands, great Australian music, but yeah, we'll have to talk more. Indeed. David Mackay, you've got appointments. Are you going to see Col Joy again this week?
Seeing him tomorrow before we head off. His son Clayton's just flown in today, and Col said, you have to meet up with Clay before you go home, so we're going to grab a coffee tomorrow.
He lives and works over there, doesn't he?
Oh, he does amazing stuff.
Yeah.
He does all these big... all the theatre shows, he films them, and he's in demand by Disney, everybody. He's the real thing.
Yeah. David Mackay, and I didn't really get to talk to Peter Roach, but thanks for coming in, and thanks for bringing David in. This is from Shane McLennan. He says, today is a significant one for Tonga Police, as it's Palm Sunday today, and it's time of our annual Tonga... Police Divine Service, which is at the Free Wesleyan Church in Nuku'alofa, otherwise known as the King's Church. Members of the royal family, the Prime Minister, diplomats and police families will all be there today in Tonga. The feature will be the Royal Tonga Police Band and the Tonga Police Choir. They never fail to bring a tear to my eye when they perform like this. I genuinely say that they are the best police band in the world. The service will be live streamed on Facebook by Tonga Broadcasting Commission, 7 o'clock Australian Eastern Summer Time and 8 o'clock Australian Eastern Daylight Time. That's today, so we've missed it probably, but you'll probably find it there. Thanks for the shout-out last week. He rang last week, did Shane. Anyway, have a great show on a blessed Sunday, says Shane. And he sent that this morning at 5:30. See, I've just got it now.
Yes, hello, Macca. It's Jeanette from Grenfell in New South Wales.
Jeanette.
Yeah.
Hi, Jeanette. Yep.
Yeah. You were talking with Peter Roach just recently.
Yeah. Just now.
Just now. Yes. Yeah. And I have his book. I have a book that I bought that was written by Peter Roach many, many, many years ago. It was all about, you know, pet care and all, he went through the various different types of pets that most people have.
Yeah.
In their life, but yeah, and it was always one of those really informative things to go back to, and I sort of, you know, used to rely on it quite a lot when I was much younger.
Where are you, Jeanette?
I'm in Grenfell, uh-huh. in central west New South Wales, near Cowra, between Cowra and
Yeah,
Thorpe.
I know where it is. Yeah. And you've got animals, have you?
Oh, absolutely. We've got a menagerie here. Actually, I'm sitting here at the kitchen table with a long-haired guinea pig, which I'm just about to groom.
Oh, of course, as you do on a Sunday morning.
As you do on a Sunday morning, yes, yes. No, but I have spoken to you before. I used to live at Nowra, at Bomaderry on the south coast, and I spoke to you once about some horses I had at one stage, and I had an old trotter, and you know, I mean, you were talking about trotting horses and how wonderful they were, and I think I rang and spoke to you about that at that time. So, but yeah, when you sort of said you were talking to Peter Roach, I went, oh yes.
They still remember you,
they
Pete.
Still remember, isn't that lovely?
Yeah, there you go. See, some people would and some people wouldn't, but I used to listen to you quite religiously on a Friday when you were on. I'm much older now. I mean, I'm nearly 70 now, but I was much younger then.
You listened to him till the diarrhea struck. was the end of Peter.
That was the end of Peter. I know. That's,
should have switched to the morning session.
It's all part of owning animals, isn't it, really?
Yeah, I'll say. And long-haired guinea pigs. Well, how come you've got long-haired? Have you got several?
Well, my daughter and... No, I do have a couple, but my daughter breeds guinea pigs, Sarah, and she's been doing it. Oh, look, my goodness, she's nearly 40 now, but she's been breeding them since she was a tiny child. And
why would you breed guinea pigs? Is there a market for them?
Because she shows them, and yes, and there is a big market for, you know, good quality, well-bred guinea pigs. I mean, she can get, you know, $70 or $80, you know, for a really good, well-bred guinea pig. I mean, there's a whole range of different breeds that you can own. And Australia, unfortunately, is a little bit, we're locked in because we're not allowed to import any more bloodlines in from overseas. So the stock we have is the stock we have. And, you know, we tend to be slowly breeding ourselves into a bit of a corner because
have you got a thought on that, Pete?
And they breed like guinea pigs.
Yeah.
Well, they don't actually. We don't let them breed like guinea pigs. Like, we've got them all separated and we only breed what we want. And but my daughter has several different breeds, but I concentrate on the long hairs. I've got what they call a coronet at the moment sitting in my hands, and I mean he is long-haired, and he has to be groomed and rolled. You've got to roll the coat so it doesn't break off and tear away, and that gets done every day. And I've got another youngster that's coming on as well. So,
and they're great for the kids too. They're a good little pet for the children.
Yeah.
Yeah, some breeds are better than others. I mean, some of them I tend to be a little bit more aggressive and a little bit more bitey, whereas And that's why I like the long hairs, because they're easy to handle, easy to handle.
See,
but
who'd have thought this morning I had David McCoy in here talk about music and we end up talking about guinea pigs? I think it's wonderful. I think you never know where it's going to go on Sunday morning.
No, well, that is for sure. So when are you going to come to Grenfell and do a show for us out here?
On the first opportunity. I'll be there. And Jeanette, and I'll come and look at your long hair. What's his name or her name?
Oh, well, his name is Mr. Mistopheles.
Mr. Mistopheles, there you go.
Yes. Yeah, but my daughter's got about 100 of them outside, like all different types and breeds and varieties.
Mr. Mistopheles.
Yeah, Mr. Mistopheles.
And who was Mistopheles? Was a Greek god of something? Of what?
Well, the only Mistopheles I know was a cat. Cats. From the Cats movie. Yeah, Mr. Right. Mistopheles. Yeah.
All right. Jeanette, thanks for calling.
That's all right.
And I'll see you in Grenfell sometime. It's a nice town.
Well, mate, that'd be lovely. Super. Yeah.
All right.
Well, thank you. Thank you for taking my call. Regards to Peter.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Okay. Right then. Okay. Bye bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.